All right, speaking of rough times and everything, we've obviously had a couple of seasons here where things have not probably gone as well as we like. What do you really see for this year to be, consider this season a success?
Well, you know, first and foremost, you have to win football games. I mean, that's what we're in the business of doing. It's not in the business of getting close. It's not in the business of making it competitive, and we want to do that. And I understand there are progressions in programs. You don't you don't build winners overnight. And I think you can look at a lot of great coaches, whether it's Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech right now, or Bobby Bowden at Florida State, or I respect Coach Dodge tremendously. I'm not trying to put him in that level of coaches, so I don't want somebody to come back saying, well, he's comparing him to Bobby Bowden or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is, though, I think if you're going to build a program the proper way, there are steps that have to be taken. First and foremost, everybody in the program has to be committed to all the aspects of the program. So with student athletes, it's not just about dedicated to the football program and not to the academic side. That's why we got to where we were. So it has to be kids that are fully developed, and you have to hold them accountable. You then have to get all of your kids on the same page. So those kids that don't want to fall in line, those kids that don't want to follow the rules, the kids that don't want to, follow the standards everybody else does, you either let them stay, and then the backside is that you have dissension among your team, or you just make the rules clear right up front and you go with it. And he's done that. I mean, I think right now you have a team that's as seamless as there could be. I think they're all committed to the same mission. I think they all, I don't watch workouts because that's against NCAA rules, but I can tell you that I know that a lot of kids have been on campus this summer just by the number of cars in the parking lot when I drive up. And, that's not been the case in a lot of past summers. So there are a lot of kids here working out. There are a lot of kids here on their own voluntarily getting ready for the season. From a APR standpoint, which a lot of people will say, well, that's not a big deal. It is a big deal. It costs us 11 scholarships. And the reality is that this head coach didn't cause that. But in a year and a half, at the end of this semester, I believe he'll have 1,000 on the APR for this semester. And I believe at the end of this year that he will have gotten us out of the hole in a year and a half. Which is a huge accomplishment. In the process, some people have left the program. I mean, that's part of building a new program. Some older kids are going to leave because they don't want to mix in, and some newer kids are going to come in because there was kind of an expectation, and when things don't happen exactly the right way, they don't want to be here. But I feel like the kids that are here are committed. But we've got to win ball games. We have a schedule this year that I think that any coach in the country would look at this schedule and go say, okay, I'll take that one. I really do. I believe that. I believe it's an opportunity to compete every week that you go out and run out the tunnel. And so we have to see vast improvement. We've got to see better play in special teams. We've got to see, better production from our defensive unit. We've got to see our offense. I think the thing that was probably most frustrating to me and probably to a lot of people was going into Coach Dodge's first season with high expectations. You go back and look at that season and, Arkansas State doesn't throw a 40-yard touchdown pass on the last play of the game, or, you go back through all these times and you look at those games and we could have won four or five games. I mean, we were really in a position to win four or five games that year and really competitive. And I felt like going into last year, wow, we really got a chance to really make some hay. And like you said, we go out and we don't play well at Rice. We don't play well anywhere. For the most part, and that was really disappointing. We can point to a lot of things. Yeah, we played a lot of freshmen last year. I mean, we really did. You look at the injuries in the offensive line, you lose a Kelvin Drake before the season ever starts, and you got to start a true freshman at center, and J.J. Johnson plays his tail off. But you got to move people around. Casey Fitzgerald did a great job for us last year, Brock Stickler also, but we didn't have the kind of depth at wide receiver that we might have needed. If people, if we had the people that we all started with, we'd have had a little different depth.
Well, you've been here, I mean, during the right now the lean years, and then also the years where really there wasn't a Sun Belt team that could really compete with us for most of the seasons. I mean, do you feel like this personnel and this coaching staff can get the job done in the Sun Belt? And that's in keeping in mind, the Sun Belt's a better conference, I think, across the board than it was back then.
A lot of people want to beat this conference off, but go back and look at at the records against Conference US teams, USA teams Conference in the last USA. 3 or 4 years. And, you know, people say, well, we ought to be in Conference USA. Well, you know, I mean, it's a good conference. I mean, I'd be the first to say that. But also, I was around that conference when it started. You know what? It was a lot like the Sun Belt. Nobody respected most of the teams in there. There were kind of teams left over that didn't get a conference somewhere else. And that group of teams built themselves into a conference. Well, look around this conference right now. Look how many people Troy's beaten up on. Look at what Arkansas State has done. Look at, I mean, realistically, look even at as you get down into the league a little bit more. You know, Louisiana Lafayette's been there every year, just can't get over that hump. They can't win that seventh game, but they're right there. And I'm just telling you that this league is a football league. It's better and better every year. You look at the progress that Florida International is making, that Florida Atlantic made. So this league that started out with, you know, eight teams that were basically teams thrown together from other places that had no way to recruit, really. I mean, you think about it. What did you have to recruit to? No conference, no bowl game, no anything. All of a sudden, boom, you got a bowl game. You got a conference to recruit to. You got a championship. And all of a sudden, people started recruiting to that. And so, you know, I think right now this league continues to get to progress, and that makes it tougher on everybody. It makes it tougher on us. Do I think this coaching staff can get it done? If I didn't think they'd get it done, they wouldn't be here. And, you know, I mean, it's a process of, you know, I think the addition of Coach Nelson, you know, just watching him in the spring and being around him, you know, he's a guy that's a no-nonsense guy. He's going to tell players like it is. He has the ability. He has the coaching credentials. And he has the knowledge to take kids like Eldrick Gilmore and take them to another level. I truly believe that. And I think that's going to be a big plus. I think that, you know, Shelton Gandy now taking over special teams, I think we'll see a tremendous difference there. I think even, but you know, I think the other thing is that if you're going to be effective as a coaching staff, your talent level has to increase. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, and buts. If you coach the same kids every year, even if you're really good coaches, the exponentially you can only get so much better. But I mean, you know, if you look at the talent that's been brought in this past year, you know, I don't know that we've had a kid since I've been here that realistically ran a sub 4.4. I could go back and look. We might have had one. But I can't think of a kid, and I'm talking about great kids. I mean, you're talking about a guy like, you know, Jamario Thomas or Patrick Cobbs or great players, Johnny Quinn, those. But those guys couldn't run 4.4, you know. And I look at times for pro time and day this year, and you got, I think, five or six kids that ran sub 4.4, and I think one of them ran sub 4.3. I mean, why does that make a difference? I coach wide receivers for a while, and I can tell you that when you got guys on the outside that can run 4.4, that can really run 4.4, they can stretch secondaries. And if you look at what happened to us last year, you know, Casey didn't have those long touchdown runs. He didn't have those big – and the reason was the secondaries just started kind of backing off on us and keeping us bottled inside. Well, go ahead and do that this year. You know, if I don't know what will happen with Tyler, but if he gets eligible and you look at Jamal Jackson and some other kids in there that have that kind of speed, and you now stretch those secondaries, if you want to sit in there and play that box, go ahead. But you might be looking at the backside of a green jersey when you're doing that. So, you know, this is a very crucial year. I mean, for Coach Dodge and this staff, he knows that. He and I have talked. He believes he's going to see tremendous improvement. You know, and you know, we will do what I've always done. People say, well, how do you evaluate that? I evaluate at the end of the year. I look at what we've done. You know, I look at if I think that we're making progress. And sometimes that always doesn't equate to wins and losses. But there's got to be wins. There's no ifs, ands, and buts.
Out of the wacky Gomeen Green question bag, you were talking about scheduling earlier, UTEP. Why has UTEP never been in it? Is it because they want a 2-for-1, or is it?
Well, originally it was a situation where it was kind of you'll notice that Houston wasn't on the schedule. It hasn't been on the schedule. Well, you know, when I called down, and they have a new athletic director, Mac Rhodes, who I know very well, so I intend to call him very soon. But when Dave Maggard was there, his philosophy was they were better than us. So if you're going to play, you have to play at our place, and we're not going to play a home-and-home. Are we going to play you 2-for-1? And I wasn't going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm really not. I'm not even at a point where, you know, we have a deal with Kansas State. But
see, I don't know if I buy that. I think that's short-sighted, because if I'm him, I'd love to have a chance to come play here. If he's so good, come play here and get in front of this recruiting situation here that you know he wants to tap into.
Well, I don't disagree. I mean, I totally – when I have those conversations – I'm kind of, you know, I mean, with them, it was, you know, guys, I don't get it. I mean, you know,
plus he's got players' families that live out here.
You've got a base in Dallas, and so to bring Houston here, is a good opportunity. And I think they more looked at it, well, okay, we're going to get to the Dallas market every other year because we're playing SMU, so we don't really need it as much as you do. But, you know, that's why we didn't do that. Kind of was the same thing with UTEP when we first started. But, you know, that's a team that we're going to continue to look at. One of the things that will kind of, you know, hinder us a little bit in the future as far as recruiting, and it's a good thing to some degree, is that, you know, now with 8 Sun Belt Conference opponents, you really only have 4 games to schedule. If you're playing a national prominence game, now you only have 3 games. If you have home-and-home with SMU, which I'd love to have home-and-home with SMU every year, then you block that another game. And so you get down to very few games being available. You know, I want to make sure that we have an opponent in here every year that's I'd like to either be a regional team, a team like an Army or a Navy or those kind of teams. And I think you'll see us start to schedule some, as other schools are doing it, a 1AA to come in here from time to time to complete our schedule. So
the money game, Texas, Oklahoma, the rest of the teams, either, you know, someone in the state of Texas, Baylor, SMU, you know, I mean – those, the SMU thing you bring up, I mean, everyone that went to that last SMU game just said, man, this, we ought to be playing these games every single year.
The good part is we have a long-term contract in place right now. It'll get even longer. So that's kind of already a measure that's been fixed. We'll look to bring the UTEP in. We'll look to bring regional teams in. But, you know, my thing, my vision and my process along with my staff is that we're going to make sure that we've got a schedule that's competitive, but also gives our teams the best opportunity at home to be successful in front of our home fans, and gives the best chance to have a winning record every year.
All right, Rick, let's talk about obviously the season's about to start, and I know there's a lot of things, activities going to be coming up. We want to talk about the game day experience. You know, over the past few years, everybody that I know of has always loved all the pregame stuff that has evolved since you got here out there. It has truly become a situation where tailgating is fun and everybody brings their family out. There's fireworks afterwards. It's a great experience. What can we look at this year? A lot of the same. Anything new? What can you tell us?
Well, you know, we'll always want to continue to do a lot of the things because, you know, you want to continue doing it because they're tradition. I mean, now our team walking through the tailgating area, even when we move over to this facility, that will still be a part of what we do. We want people to come out and, you know, 2 hours prior to the game and be a part of that spirit walk and have the players come through. And I think that's a neat deal. We'll continue to have bands, Kids Fun Land, for folks to come out. You know, we want to encourage more people. You know, I think, and it is changing, the first couple of years that we did it, you know, guys like Rick McKinney and you guys and that group would come out and cook out tons of food and everybody would come eat at your place.
The humanity.
Yeah, I mean, it would be that, you know, let's control. And nobody else brought food. They just show up to your place and students and everybody to eat everything that you had. You know,
it was a good idea at first. Yeah.
Well, no, it worked. I mean, when Rob started and, you know, it was like, yeah, everybody exactly knew where to meet, right. You know, it was a group deal, but obviously we've outgrown that, and right, that's a great thing.
No, I think that's great, and I do need to give Rob Black his props because he was a big part of that deal. But, you know, now it's kind of expanded to that people are becoming more individualized, and, you know, there are smaller groups are still bringing their grills in, and that's got to you know, grow even further. We want people to, you know, we want people to come now and bring their grill and bring 4 or 5 new friends with them. You know, we want to expand that entire area. You know, one of the things that some people have a problem with is festival parking. They're going, Rick, why can't we park where we want to? And, you know, I never really kind of, I think, have addressed this publicly, but, you know, a part of that is that by festival parking, what we can do is once you get your cars parked, we can let you set your tents up behind your cars and block off that lane so that, because there'll be no traffic down that lane. So if once we fill up one lane, all that's filled up with tents, nobody's going to come down there. And so we do that row by row, and they do that just about everywhere you go. And we want that. We want people. We'd love for everybody out there to have their truck or car, and right behind it they got their tent and their grill, you know, and they're bringing their friends, and, you know, bring your friends at the same time, park next to them, and get out there. I think you'll see some new twists. We're going to get the band a little more involved. We want to do some more in the tailgating area activities. So, you know, promotional giveaways, or, you know, we kind of done the dirtiest car in the parking lot, but we want to get out and actually have some, you know, a roving guy who will do some contests or those kind of things that just kind of gets you a little bit more primed for the game. But, you know, really what that time ought to be about is you with your family, you with your friends coming out. We don't want to intrude a lot upon your deal. You know, I envision as we move that we would continue to grow this the next 2 years, But that as we move it over, you know, if you've never been to the Grove at Ole Miss, and I've had that opportunity before, I envision that's what I'd like to see our place be like. You know, I mean, you can go to that stadium 3 hours, 4 hours before game, there's 18,000 people in there with tents and no cars, tents and tailgates. It's an area where you can drop your stuff off.
They're partying too.
But they're having a great time, and they're getting ready for the game. You know, some of them have too much fun because about, you know, 7,000 of them stay out there. But
well, unlike LSU, most of them actually went to the school. At LSU, right, everybody there didn't really go to the school. They're just there for the party.
Well, you know, and I'd be honest with you, when you talk about most programs – who are drawing the 70, 80,000 people, I'd be willing to bet money that at all those schools, less than 35% of the fans didn't go to school there. I mean, they take great pride in a state team. So at Tennessee, they do that, or Georgia, they
Oklahoma.
Do it. Oklahoma. But, you know, Texas. So, you know, for us, that's what we want to build. You know, we've got to start with our alumni base, but getting these local communities involved and getting people interested in what we're doing. And, you know, it all goes back to winning. It all comes – you know, people say – I guess there was, you know, an article a couple of days ago that talked about how we hadn't drawn 20,000 since we got here. You know, I look at it the opposite side. I look at a time when I have a picture that I keep – you know, this sounds a little crazy to some people, but I have a picture that somebody gave me the first day that I got here that I keep in a Bible at my house, and it was a picture of the home crowd, the
New
game,
Mexico State,
the last game before I got here, and I literally could count the people in the stands on the other side. And, you know, I think the experience that we've built around games today, to go through the four seasons that we've gone through and still to get 17, 18,000 people out there shows you that when we get this program where we're going to get it, and it's going to get there one way or the other, it's going to get there, that we can draw 25, 30,000 on a regular basis. So, I look at it a glass half full. You know, I mean, yeah, we've struggled. Yeah, we're not filling our stadium every week. But in a time when we haven't played well, in a time when people could have kind of run away, people continue to come out and have a good time. And that's what it is. It's a football event. It's not a football game. It's a football event. And we just got to make sure that the game is a great entertainment from now on. And when I say that, we just got to go out and win and be competitive in those games we don't win. You know, if a team's better than we are, great. But, you know, we ought to be competitive every time we walk out in our home place.
I'll tell you the best test is I've taken people to games that we've had disappointing losses in, you know, and they've still walked away and said, you know what, I had a really good time and I want to go back again.
And see, I think that's just like what Rick said.
Where,
you know,
before that wasn't the case.
Yeah,
when there wasn't all the other things.
We've kind of made it over the hump where we'll have people show up no matter how poor the season's going. And people will go, like I said before, I have some of our close personal friends that both went to Texas. They love going to our Texas games because it's a family deal. They have a great time. And they don't really know what the, you know, they don't have a real association with school besides me, but they have a great time. And, you know, for them to go to a Texas game, it is a full-on ordeal, and they have a good time, but not like they have here. They have an enjoyable time, and that's really what we need to keep going. And then as the team gets better, you're just going to have more and more people falling in.
And our biggest challenge is getting those people back who haven't been in a while. You know, if they haven't seen the change. You know, I had a guy last year come up to me after a game and go, you know, I used to come here like 15 years ago. They didn't have tailgate. You couldn't tailgate. And, you know, I used to drive up my car and just pull out a couple beers and have a couple beers before the game. I'd go in halftime and come out and have a couple more beers, might go back in, might not. And, you know, he said it was just really – there was nothing. I mean, it was kind of just here was a game, and if we were bad or you were playing bad. And he said, you know, I came out today and there's smokers going and I can smell food and the band's up there and you got, you know, music and entertainment and the whole nine yards. And he said, you know, I had a great time. I had as good a time before the game as I had at games when I came and stayed the whole game. And, you know, I think that's part of the process. And, you know, I think we just got to, again, you know, I think if you looked at our website lately or you've kind of taken, I hope people have taken to heart what we're trying to do, and that's provide more information, to listen more, to take suggestions and recommendations. And we want to hear them. You know, we may not agree with them. We may argue about them. That's fine because we're getting all the issues on the table and we're hearing what people have to say. You know, I'm not gonna put black uniforms in because all of a sudden somebody thinks that's chic to do. You know, our colors are not black; it's green and white, and that's what we're
going. I thought I had read that you had ordered some black
uniforms. Yeah, well, I won't get into that. And,
there is
you know,
some helmet logo discussion going.
Helmet logo. Does that ever go away?
I will talk about that just one second. You know, people say, "Why don't we put UNT on the side of the helmet?" You know, I just don't think that if you look around the country, there are not very many schools other than LSU or UCLA that are putting, you know, a three-letter logo on there. You know, if you got a two-letter, it's a little different, you know.
Virginia Tech.
But we don't want to go across. We understand what the university branding situation is also. So we don't want to cross that over. We think that Mean Green and North Texas and UNT should be synonymous. And there's a way to build that. So people say, why don't you put the eagle on the helmet? Well, you know what? We need to become more well-known and more recognized so that when people see that eagle, they recognize North Texas. So we're going to incorporate the eagle more into our uniforms across all of our sports so that when you see North Texas, you see the eagle. And as that association grows, then I can see more uses of the eagle in logo placement so that when people say, oh, that's North Texas. You know, right now, we're still in a building stage. I go back to the statement I made early in this discussion is that I said it was going to take more than 10 years to get this done. It was going to take more than 10 years to build the proper fan base, to get the program rolling the way it should be. And so it's a slow balance. I mean, you know, we've changed logos I don't know how many times. I got here, we had brown and silver and bronze, gold, whatever it was in the logo. We had, you know, swooping eagles, cartoon eagles, whatever it might be.
Script.
And we have got to stay. We have got to stay now where we are. You know, we've got to stay with our logo, stay with our theme, stay with our colors, so that we, you know, 25 years from now, it's the same, and you can put that eagle anywhere, and people know who it is. People know where it belongs. But building a brand is a slow process. You know, I've had some people, you know, out there, well, you need to go back to Eagles and be Mean Green. I'm going to go back to the same thing I said a long time ago. If we were Eagles, people would still be confusing us with Lake Dallas or you know, the other local Eagle teams. And our Eagle is still our mascot. It will always be our mascot, but we're going to be the Mean Green. And I can tell you right now, just by doing that, when you travel around the country in athletic or non-athletic situations, when you say North Texas, people say Mean Green, right? Or if you say Mean Green, they go North Texas, right? And that's because we're unique. It's because it's, you know, people say, what's a Mean Green? I don't know. What's a Crimson Tide? You know, it's one of those things where we have this ability to be unique, and we ought to embrace it rather than push it away.
It's so funny
I
when you say
Monahan
that because
Mean Green too. So.
When I started the website many, many years ago, a prior athletic director representative, I won't get into specifics, scolded me about using Mean Green because we were the Eagles, which that just blew my mind for the exact reason you say. Everyone, there's, you know, 300 teams that are the Eagles or whatever. And Mean Green, it's such a neat – I just always thought that was such a neat nickname and something that differentiated us.
Well, and, you know, it was kind of surprising to me that people – I guess the biggest complaint I heard for a year or so was, well, why did you come in here and create the Mean Green? You know, that's not your job. That's not your business. And I went, you know, I mean, I didn't create Mean Green. It was here a long time before I got here, and it was being used as lately as the late 80s and early 90s. So It wasn't like it was some just pie in the sky, pull it out of the hat deal. But again, I think that, you know, you can wear North Texas gear now around and people will say, hey, Mean Green, right? And I think that's huge. I think that recognition, I mean, just look at royalty sales. We've had increased royalty sales every year for the last 7 years. And I think last year, this past year, we did almost $4.5 million in merchandise sales. I think the first year we got here, we were doing $1.1 million in merchandise sales. So when you start to look at that, and that brings up another thing, and I know you didn't ask the question, so there's some things I just want to throw out. But, you know, people, I read a thread the other day about somebody went into Walmart or Sam's or some store, and there was only one North Texas shirt, and there were several Texas shirts, and they said, you know, I guess they bought up all the North Texas shirts, and I didn't buy it. I'm glad it didn't fit because I didn't buy it because people would know that we still had one there. Well, you know, you're seeing more and more North Texas gear in more and more stores, but we can see even more. You just got to go out and ask for it, and you got to go out and buy it. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody knows working as an athletic director at the university, I don't have to buy a lot of North Texas gear. I mean, between all of our teams and that. But if I go in a store and they have North Texas stuff, I buy something. Mm-hmm. And I do it on a regular basis. And, you know, then I'll take it and we'll sell it in a garage sale, or, you know, I'll give it to somebody here at the university or whatever it might be. But, you know, we've got that purchasing power, 100,000 alums in this area. You know, we need to go out and buy. We need to go out and say we want this stuff, because the more we'll do it, the more good stuff you're going to see, the more progressive stuff you're going to see. I mean, you can go in stores now. I've seen kids walking around campus with Under Armour stuff and that kind of, you know, those kind of things. It's really sharp looking. I'm going, wow, we would have never had that 4 or 5 years ago. So I think our purchasing power, you know, right today it's $4.5 million. It ought to be $8 million. You know, and it's easy to do. And just, you know, we also take our recommendations. One of the things that I brought up to Rick McKinney, we talked one after a basketball game one day. You know, you can't get a North Texas mini football uniform, you know. And when I was growing up, you could get those things. And of course, in the state of Texas, you can still get them, but they all have Longhorns on them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I actually called Hutch, the company, and said, hey, listen, I don't need that orange jersey and the logo, but could you just send me the helmet, shoulder pads, and the pants, and I'll pay for it. Doesn't matter. Just send me the deal. And they did, and I went, and of course I took it downstairs and had it logoed up like a North Texas helmet, and bought a North Texas shirt. But you know, the one thing I told Rick McKinney about it, and I said, you know what, we need to do this anyway. We need to do this not just for my grandson. You know, we need to get 100 of these, and people need to be able to buy them for birthdays or for Christmas or whatever. And you know, Rick was going, wow, I never thought you would think that way. But that's how we ought to be thinking. And the reality is, even though somebody won't produce it for us, let's put it out there and let's have a bunch. Let's have 100 little kids running around in these North Texas uniforms where people are going, hey, where'd you get that? You know, how'd you get that? So when we have our No Spirit store, you know, in the stadium, we'll carry that as a regular item, because we want those kids not to have to put on that orange jersey, not to have to put on that Longhorn on the side of the helmet, because that's the only thing they could get. Actually, one of our attorneys on campus asked me, she had seen the one I did, and she said, well, I have a son, he's little, can you do that for me if I get the deal? And we went and got it for him and got it done, and he loves it. He still wears it today. It doesn't fit anymore, but he still tries to wear it. But those are the ways we got to think. You know, we've got to expand who we are out there and what we are out there.
I had an idea I was going to throw at you, Rick, and maybe this has already been thrown at you, but has there been any thought in terms of maybe creating some type of credit card that people could show their affiliation with North Texas Athletics, or that where the interest or whatever could go towards the stadium or a project?
Yeah, like a point deal for the stadium?
Yeah.
You know, we try to be supportive across campus of all entities that are going on, and I know that the credit card program for the Alumni Association was one of those things where they were generating revenue. And from our standpoint, you know, we want to be supportive of all the programs. And so to kind of step on their feet was not really what I wanted to do from that standpoint. But yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think anytime
I'm just saying, if people have cards, I mean, I try to use my debit card all the time, but still I would think I'd feel better about if I knew that that card was going to go towards helping the stadium or something, you know, related to that. I would, you know, I would think about getting one and maybe using it. And I think other people would be the same way.
And again, it is something we have discussed, we have thought about. And, you know, again, our biggest concern is not impeding on the other programs in right. the campus. And, you know, if that's a situation where they feel comfortable, then, yeah, we would love to do it. And I think a lot of fans would like to have them and would use them, no doubt about that.
Just a thought.
I think it's an excellent thought. Well, Rick, what else do you have? This is a good forum for you to, you know, speak to a lot of fans that follow Go Green.
We got the
Green.
Big event coming up Saturday.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
Yeah,
you
it's
talk
a little bit of
that?
A change for us, you know, because we're starting early. It just got to be so hot at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, it was a killer, sweltering. So, you know, and we sat down and said, how can we expand what we're doing, and how are we, you know, how can we get more people here? So we came up with the idea of a 5K run. I think we have over 200 people who are signed up for that. And people can come out and watch the race. The cook-off will take place right after that. We'll get people out of here pretty early before it gets too hot. And I think it'll be a good opportunity. One of the things is we have a tent set up right behind the athletic center, and it'll give people a chance. You know, we'll talk about where the stadium's going to sit. I know a lot of questions. We'll have a lot of the new renderings out. People will be able to ask questions about the new renderings. And we want them to, you know, good or bad. We want them to answer, you know, ask questions. We'll be glad to answer questions. But they'll get a chance to, you know, say, hey, you know, we'll be able to say, we'll have it kind of staked out. Here's where the 50-yard line will be. Here's where the end line on the north side will be. And, you know, to kind of stand there, I walked the property the other day with a group of architects, and you don't really realize how big it's going to be, the footprint of the stadium is going to be, until you walk out to the end of the North Concourse and you're going, oh my gosh, this is almost to the highway. And when you think of the immenseness of this project and how big it will sit on here, it's really kind of neat to sit there in the middle of that 50-yard line after you've looked at the renderings and then to look around and go, wow, that's where the club will be, and that's where the streets will be.
It's so visible by the freeway.
Well, my question is, Rick, I mean, if you know, we see all these renderings, and these are great, and if there's going to be these out for this weekend, everybody's got to see these, because, I mean, just my head's been spinning the whole time I've been here, just looking at all the different angles and this walkover area you're talking about from the athletic department to the new stadium. I mean, this is stuff that hasn't been in the paper. Everybody's got to see it. These are great shots. My question is, you know, in relation to, like, the Radisson, how high will the stadium be? I mean, I know that the stadium, the floor itself will be kind of down into the ground, but how high will this stand?
Well, the actual stadium itself will be about 120 feet in the air. And if you look at the rendering right there, I mean, you look in comparison to how big this building looks when you're looking from the highway, and then look at that in relation to the stadium, and you'll see that it's going to be another 60 feet in the air. I mean, it will be massive and very impressive from the highway. And then the light standards themselves will be another 25 feet. Now, some people get a little nervous because the light standards are so high, but actually, that's a good thing because it pours more of the light down into the stadium. You know, we're going to build this stadium so that it's TV ready. We were talking about this earlier. 8 of our games this year will be on TV. But we want more games from our stadium. So two of the things that we're doing is making sure that we're at the tip top of NCAA standards when it comes to lighting. So when ESPN or anybody else wants to come in here, we're going to have the best lighting that's available. And the second thing we're doing is on the south end of the stadium, there will be a junction hookup box for TV trucks. So rather than having to run around and throw cables over the side of the stadium, they'll have two options. One will have a box that they can plug right into and connect all their feeds to, or we have conduit that will run that they can actually pull their wires through and run it right in it with great ease. So, but it's going to be massive when you think about it. You know, when people that come out on Saturday, when you look at the athletic center and then realize that the stadium will be twice that tall, or maybe a little bit bigger than twice that tall on the west side, it's kind of impressive. You know, other people have asked, you know, do we have an upper deck or do we not have an upper deck? Well, I think it depends on how you look at things. In essence, we do have an upper deck in that it will be kind of like Fouts Field in that you'll go up one way or down the other, but it'll be a lot higher. The other thing is that it doesn't quite look that way because a lot of the seating is down in the lower bowl, and that's kind of a depressed area.
Similar to Ford Stadium.
To SMU very much stadium, like SMU, right. Yes. If you go to SMU, there's not an upper deck, lower deck, but there is. I mean, when you get in there, it actually goes down in so deep that there is a difference. Now, on the club level, the seats are cantilevered out over the stadium. So there's two great things there. One, people in the club level are going to have a great seating area. You can kind of see it hanging off the edge over here. But their seating's out on the outside. So you have an interior space where you can watch the big screens and eat the buffet and those kind of things, but your seat's actually outside, cantilevered over the seats below. So that makes great seating for them. It also makes some great seating available below that cantilevered area because you're protected from the elements. So, you know, those are going to be some prime seats when the stadium opens up. But it will definitely have a great profile from the highway.
As far as the perimeter of where the stadium meets up with the field, is that as close as you could get it? Were you trying to get – I know that's always a big issue for people, is how close can we get the stands to the field to play?
It's about as close as you want to get. It's not as close to Oklahoma State, which is way too close. That's good for the fans, but when you got, you know, kids that have to stand against the wall because there's no other space, that gets to be a little crazy. I think at the farthest point – from the 50-yard line to that seat on the 50-yard line is 15 yards, 45 feet. Today, you know, from Fouts Field, it's probably, 85 or 100 feet. It's probably even less than 45 feet there. But the first row of seats is 6 foot above the playing surface. Mm. So instead of being down low today, you'll be
looking almost up. You'll actually
in your seat be looking at, above the top of the players. But you literally, you know, in some areas in the corners and those areas can reach out and, you know, you'll be as close as you want to be. So we have squeezed as much as we can. One of the things that we, the option we have left open is that, you know, we think it's going to be a great venue. And with 30,000 seats, you know, there might be opportunity to host big time soccer games here when we're not playing football. So we want to build a space big enough that we could bring soccer into this arena and play soccer here.
Now, the Diamond Vision screen, if I'm looking at this correctly, is that it in the end zone opposite from the Athletic Center?
That's correct. It'll sit in between the V that will be the north end zone lines. You know, we talked today to a couple of companies, and our new scoreboard will be all digital. There won't be, you know, a space where it says home and visitors.
Right.
It'll all be digital, so that in the event we want to show a highlight of the 2001 bowl team on the 10-year anniversary in 2011 or wherever it might be, that you'll get the whole feel. So when you're watching it, you're not watching a square. You can watch the whole screen. Of course, it can kick back at any time to score time, all those kind of things. But we want to make full use, full access to that board. So it'll be a complete LED board. Won't be any tri-visions or any of those things. It'll all be digital.
In the technology of building the stadium right now, that's one of those things you can take advantage of.
Oh, there's no doubt. Yeah, sure. We want to make sure we get the latest technology that goes in there, and we have some people helping us with that to make sure that we get not only the latest technology but at the best price available. So,
waterless urinals?
No, you know what? We are doing a lot of green initiatives. It's actually going to be the term is the two-pint flush is what it's called, and it's basically it maximizes water usage. The waterless urinals, they have their drawbacks. Cartridges have to be replaced every week, and there's no way environmentally to dispose of those. So you have those kind of issues. So we're going to minimize our water usage. We're going to do a lot of things in the stadium. We're going to take all of the blowdown water from the cooling towers and use that in the stadium for cooling purposes. So we'll run that water and use it again. We're going to collect a lot of our water out of the stadium. We'll drain it down into the ponds, and we'll use that for our irrigation for the rest of the area around the stadium. We're looking at some possible wind turbines inside the light systems that would generate power to help run the stadium in the off season. And one of the other things is we're looking at a lot of security issues. I mean, where this stadium is going to be, we're going to be really high tech from a camera standpoint. We have an operations center in the stadium, but because of where we're located, there's a lot of security issues. And we're going to make sure we cover those. In fact, we just received a $70,000 grant and are applying for some more that will help increase the security and make sure that we're doing it the right way.
What about that whole TxDOT space over there? Is there anything you can do about that, or is that just going to be
no? You know, TxDOT. Oh, you're talking about across the street. I know the university at one time tried to trade that space, but we will have conversations with them as we get closer to the stadium as to, you know, that making sure that place is cleaned up and kept very kempt, because we'll keep our place very, very nice, but we'll also create some barriers along there to make sure we don't kind of look at that. One of the nice things, though, you know, I know that the light rail here into Denton should be in here by 2010. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things people have asked, well, how are people going to get to the game? Well, you know, one of the things that we'll create for the 2011 season is a dart rail pass. Where, you know, you at the beginning of the season, you buy from us a $30 or whatever pass it is, and it gives you access on a bus that we'll send to the dart rail and pick you up at the dart rail, bring you to the game, and afterwards bring you back.
And just have a shuttle.
Yeah, and it's just –
I mean, that's awesome. That's an awesome
deal. So we're thinking way ahead when it comes to those kind of things of moving people that don't want to face the traffic, don't want to drive the car, don't want to try to find a parking place. Well, now we can get them access. Just – you know, bring your cooler on the dart rail, and we'll pick you up on the bus. You drop you off right at the stadium. Be ready to go.
It's a beautiful thing. I mean, that's the best case scenario.
Well, Rick, I think that's probably it. Of course, you know, we really appreciate the time you spent with us on this, and I know that this we're going to make this a two-part podcast, but stadium talk was definitely the majority of this, and this is what people want to hear. And
people are excited. You know,
yeah, they really are. Really excited. And if they come out this weekend, seeing these renderings and just the stuff that you talked about, it's amazing, and it's really can't but help get you fired up for the season. So we're about a month and a couple of days away from kickoff against Ball State. So it's hopefully we'll have a good season.
And winning's important, but I remember when the student vote passed, and you know we'd had a setback on a student vote prior, so that was not a slam dunk. I mean, I remember when we talked about that, it was not a slam dunk deal. You know, when that stadium vote passed, it just a sense came to me, this stadium, winning and losing is important. Don't get me wrong. You got to win. Coach Dodge needs to win this year, no doubt about it. But that stadium makes a statement that goes beyond one season. And it's a statement that we're serious about Division I football and we're going to be a player into eternity. And I think the donors and everything that brings by making that statement is such a huge thing.
Well, and I make this every time I make a visit on a donation, a potential donation. I clarify that right up front. This is not a stadium about Todd Dodge. It's not a stadium about Rick Villarreal. You know, this is a stadium that's about this university and about the long term commitment to football, but also the long term. Commitment on behalf of the university to everything it does, to being the best at everything it does. And so, you know, if you're not a Todd Dodge fan, that's not what it's about. It's about the future athletes that are going to come through here. It's about the future wins and games that you're going to have on your campus, the future gatherings that are going to happen in this place. You know, it's not about Rick Villarreal. And if you're not a fan, it's really about promoting the program and building it the way that we should be. I mean, as a 35,000 student Division 1A school, bigger than probably 75% of the schools that play 1A football, we ought to have the kind of places and we ought to be playing in the kind of places that allow us to recruit the very best kids and put the very best product on the field. And until we're all willing to do that, you know, I will listen. I'm going to listen and hear all the negativity. But until everybody steps up, I don't put a lot of stock into it. You know, I just move on and say, you know, if you don't want to be a part of the solution, then I'm not going to let you be a part of the problem. You know, I want you to be a part that you can stand up when it's all said and done, when people like Louisville and Florida State and all those other folks made the investment and got involved and did the right thing. They won games. They won national championships. I mean, they won national championships or in the national rankings and playing for an opportunity to, you know, to be the very best, and that's what we ought to be.
All right. Well, once again, thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Rick.
We will be hopefully seeing most people out here on Saturday. And until then, go Mean Green.
Go Mean Green.
Thanks for the opportunity to be here, guys.